Always a pleasure to bring on this show our good buddy Michael Ragai. You know that name and that voice from this station and other platforms, media platforms in this market. How you doing, buddy?
It means I'm getting old. It means I'm getting old and I've been around too long, I guess.
You and me both, brother. But great to have you here. And
good to see you, Vic.
Let's talk about the draft as a whole, because I haven't had a chance to do that with you, and we got minicamp coming up tomorrow. But the big picture of this draft, these 11 picks that were made, Michael, I think there's a lot of reason to believe, if you just look at it in and of itself, areas are addressed that were critical to this football team to hit. How these play out, we'll see. But I think there's a lot of reason to like that. I think there's more reason, though, to like the connection of this draft and the previous two drafts in the succession of working your way defense, offense. And the more I stare at the these names, and then we'll see them out in the field for the next 3 days beginning tomorrow, that's what I'm feeling good about.
There's a tremendous connection there, Vic. I mean, you're absolutely right, and that's the way that it has to be built, and that's what Mike Holmgren and Tom Heckert have been telling us since they came in the door before the 2010 season. You identify and put value system then to the individuals. Mm-hmm. And not only how you value them on the surface, but as you said, the system, how they will help replenish maybe what was needed or areas that need to be upgraded. And yeah, I mean, I think that I would think most Browns fans, with the heavy emphasis on offense early, as you said, that was defense in 2010 and 2011, now is starting to get this roster in terms of upgrading the potential for starters to come in and make an impact, one. Right. Overall team speed improvement, too, and depth that's youthful that can play right now in the rotations, and then eventually some of them become starters in the next year or two. Had to have it, Vic, and I'm very, very pleased with the way they addressed the great volume of that.
Yeah, and we're going to there's so much more to it than this, but we're going to naturally focus our attention tomorrow on Brandon Weeden. We're going to want to see how this guy just throws the football in this setting. We watch plenty of tape of him doing so at Oklahoma State, mm-hmm. and it's impressive, and it clearly explains why the Browns spent that 22nd pick on him. But now we want to see him do it, and even if it's against air and throwing out there against receivers and not many of them that he has to work with, there's going to be a few guys brought in on a tryout basis just to fill out this, because it's a rookies-only roster, and there aren't a lot, 11 picks and 15 undrafted guys, and then maybe these a few of these tryout guys out there. So we'll look at that. It'll be step one in evaluating his readiness. And I know we're going to want to see something special. We're going to want to see that ball just sail through there and perfect rainbow shots and all that stuff that may or may not happen. But that's the natural thing. Yet the true success of what this draft will be has to be much more than that.
Oh, yeah. It has to be all the way through the way I look at it in what the Browns accumulated in rounds 5 and 6 and maybe even 7. And Vic, again, as we say, you attach a value system to these guys, and that's got to be through all of your diligence,
right,
through your personnel work, and then you go out and say, well, this is the guy. And I look at Mitchell Schwartz, if I may.
Sure.
And a lot of people say, well, we could have got the offensive tackle in round 4 or 5 and what. But here's the thing. He was identified not just by the Browns, Vic, but by almost every organization as the best run-blocking right tackle in the draft.
Right.
A pure right tackle, not a combo guy like Cordy Glenn or Bobby Massey that you think, well, yeah, he inside, outside, Riley Reiff. No, this guy is a right tackle. And so I applaud Tom Heckert for saying, we have, as other teams have, by the way, he's the best run-blocking right tackle here. He's a pure right tackle that could play the left side. It's not a combo guy that's an inside guy. And for that, So that you go find him and say, no, let's take him here. Let's not wait and take someone that we deem of lesser value in round four or five. And by the way, with Trent Richardson, Vic, that solidifies it. If you pick Richardson there at four, you better go get that mauler on the right side and the best one you think you can. And that's why I'm excited about Mitchell Schwartz.
Yeah, I'm very excited about what he can mean to this team. And if he locks that down and you've got three guys in Joe Thomas, Alex Mack, and this guy, the rest of the line, I'm not going to say it's as simple as it takes care of itself.
No.
But you've given those guards, those young guards, that much more of an opportunity to have margin of error.
No question.
They can and continue to grow and develop.
Right, and don't you think – right. And I mean, again, I'm not this guy – he was like, well, Jason Pinkston and Sean Lovell, well, they're 22 and 23 years old. Do you think they're going to stagnate, that this is the best that they – these young men are going – and this is where about coaching comes in.
Right.
Want to, will. These young men should start to take progressions themselves. You know, Vic, again, if Schwartz comes in and does what we all anticipate, and you're going to see a lot of defensive ends and outside linebackers being pushed backward.
Sure.
And that's when you know you've got a right tackle that's kind of a mauler and physical. And I think the Browns' offensive line has the makings of becoming, dare I say, in time, an elite unit.
Sure.
I really think it could be just that.
Michael Ragai joins us. You know him, of course, from KNR, but you also know him as the host of STO's Post Game Live that airs during the Browns' regular season. I'm fascinated with John Hughes, the third-round pick from Cincinnati, because his addition, and you think about the defensive tackle position, and you say, okay, they've got to be in pretty good shape, Ataba Rubin, Phil Taylor there, but I think that line becomes so much better if you now create a true rotation that this team did not really have last season. They would plug in Scott Paxton and try to get those guys
Brian
in there.
Brian Schaefering
at times. But truly that rotation needed to improve or needs to improve. This guy can be the key to that.
Yeah, Vic, I think so. And just a little insight and intel on draft day, day three. I have a long association with Butch Jones from calling his game when he was assistant at West Virginia and head coach at Central Michigan and Cincinnati. And Butch is terrific. And of course, head coaches are going to extol the virtues of their kids.
Their guys.
But let me just say and put it out there on the record that Butch told me off the air that, let Browns fans know that the Browns weren't the only ones up there in that third round area. Hmm. He identified New Orleans had a heavy interest in him. He identified that Denver had an interest in him. And Denver, by the way, took the young man who played next to him in Derek Wolfe.
Right.
So their two defensive tackles went. But Butch Jones, very, very high on him and said just that. He guaranteed me. He said, Michael, I guarantee you he'll come in and do exactly what Tom Heckert and Pat Shurmur want in being a guy to come in and be able to play 15, 18, 20 snaps, take a little onus off Taylor and Rubin right away and continue to develop. And so, for as long as I've known Butch Jones, I'm going to take that and run with it, Vic.
I'll tell you, I heard there was a palpable sense of excitement in this building in Berea not long after that pick was made, and I heard it from not just the defensive line coach, but I also heard it from others on the defensive staff that he said that the Cincinnati kid could be something very special. I mean, those were the exact words that were said to me in the hallway here from that.
Sure. So. And by the way, just another thing in terms of, and I know fans are locked into, and I understand it. Well, how come everybody in their analysis had
the Mel
him
Kuypers.
Seventh round, sixth round,
right.
or undrafted?
Yeah.
Okay, that's true. Okay, right? Maybe they didn't have the late intel that was coming in on this kid. But by the same token, I think everywhere you look there, Billy Wynn, the defensive tackle from Boise State, was projected to be a third rounder.
Right.
And he
right.
lasted until the sixth round.
He was available till sixth. And very excited about that.
It goes both ways, correct?
That choice, it does. That choice, James Michael Johnson, also on defense. I mean, these defensive additions, as much as, again, we were all programmed to look at this draft as an offensive splash draft, and it was, and I think it will be, despite a lot of hue and cry that they didn't get the receiver or they didn't do enough to address receiver, I'd still say that these defensive moves have as much to do with building the overall success, and that includes your offense improving because you've done more to help a side of the ball that was already reasonably strong.
No question, and there's the key. as you lead into that. The key is that on the defensive side of the ball, James Michael Johnson, in all probability, John Hughes, Emmanuel Acho, yeah, Billy Winn, these are going to be young men. They don't have to come in and start now,
right,
and make immediate impact.
Right.
Now, James Michael Johnson, we'll see him, and even Emmanuel Acho, we'll see what happens, you know, with that strong side linebacker spot, mm-hmm, right now that is Scott Fujita's. But, you know, we'll see. Yeah. But the point is that it's not a necessity on that side of the ball. And there's where we get back to you place a high value system on young men that could come in, get in the rotation, provide you reps, not have a great fall off in, right, what you're trying to do, what Dick Geron's looking to do. But as time goes by, these wouldn't surprise me at all if James Michael Johnson, Emmanuel Acho are starting linebackers in the next 2 to 3 years here. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
And big picture, as we look at the whole drafting process, a lot of folks, and rightfully so, you put a lot of stock on how important this draft is. You definitely, it's critical to the team's immediate and long-term future. But that said, a lot of work needed to be done by this administration to really fix a lot that was bad in the past. And I don't know that I think people lose sight of the fact that what is being put together, this rebuilding over this three-year process, is a big job given what was inherited when Tom Heckert got here a few years ago.
Amen, good sir. Right, guys, the preacher in the pulpit, and I'm amening you right now. Vic, I've blogged about it here a couple different times in the last months on ESPN Cleveland. I've discussed it on these airwaves many times. Fans, you really need to take a step back and realize I've used the word, so what a complete abomination this roster was when Tom Heckert walked in the door. I'm sorry, it was. It was a roster that was not prepared to win then, much less going forward.
Yeah.
It was old, it was slow, it didn't have a lot of impactful starters, and it had virtually no youthful depth to it as well.
Right.
It had to be blown up. And I think there has to be more recognition of that. And these drafts are the starting point and the signature of having to do just that. Tom Heckert is too humble a man, and he has too much conviction. He's not going to come out and say that.
Yeah.
But I believe that someone has to say it, though.
Well,
this roster was a mess.
Yeah.
It was a complete mess when he walked in the door. First thing he did, very first move he made, the Brady Quinn trade that netted Peyton Hillis and a draft pick. Then the free agent signings of both Benjamin Watson and Scott Fujita. Well, go back in 2010, Benjamin Watson was the Browns' offensive MVP. And no question about it, in 2010.
Yeah. Sure.
And then the deal that brought Chris Gokong and Sheldon Brown. So it started even before the first draft. But it had to be done.
Yeah.
And it is not an easy process. It just isn't. I'm being realistic. There's things to be critical about, and I have and I will.
Sure.
But if you look at it in totality.
This is big picture, yeah.
Big picture, it was virtually unprepared, not at all heading in the direction that would bring you any success at all. It had to be completely blown up, and that's what he's done.
And I know the hard part for folks to deal with is the patience that comes with letting these drafts unfold, letting these players have their spots, their impact, and they are. I mean, the last two, they are. This one, we've got to see it, but the previous two drafts are starting to tell, I think, a different narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I know the record doesn't tell a different narrative, obviously,
right,
and that's the win-loss record. But the track record of what these guys have done in terms of getting guys on the field and making an impact is notable, and that's great stuff. Michael, and I appreciate you stopping by.
Always, buddy. Good seeing you, and we'll have some fun here at this rookie mini camp and in OTAs, and it's going to be very enjoyable to watch how some of this all comes together.
We'll have you back soon. He is Michael Rayguy. You hear him here, and you hear him elsewhere, and he's the man. We love having him on the show. Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, it's driven by Liberty Ford. It's brought to you by Madden NFL 12, EA Sports. It's in the game.